Thank y'all for tuning back in. I'd like to get through our title sponsors real quick. Here we go. Rex Broadheads. I want to thank Matt Taggart and his team for being the title sponsor for this podcast. North Missouri Land Company. Check out David Wilt and Luke Shoemaker with North Missouri Land Company if you're looking to buy or sell your property. Alemashield Hunt Spray. Scent control technology. Everybody uses scent control technology that hunts with us here at BTT. We really appreciate Alemashield Hunt for teaming up with us. Dan DeWitt at Old Indian Tricks LLC. If you're into making mock scrapes, be sure to check out Dan DeWitt. Look up Mock Scrape Nation. I promise you, you will learn a ton just from watching him lay down some mock scrapes, seeing all the big bucks coming in to him early season, mid-season, and late season. Buzzard Roost Saddles, located in South Louisiana. We finally have somebody around here making saddles right here in Louisiana. Be sure to check them out too. Tell them BTT sent you over there to check them out. We really appreciate y'all. Let's get into the episode.
Welcome to the Between the Tines Outdoor Podcast, where it's all about gaining more knowledge, strategies, management, and telling great hunting camp stories. So sit back and enjoy today's guest.
Welcome back to Between the Tines Outdoor Podcast. Kind of different in here tonight. There's not one person in here with me tonight. I feel out of place. I do got a special guest. Awesome guy. Met him at Southern Boys Outdoors last year, I believe. Ever since then, hell of a turkey caller. Guess what? It's getting close to turkey season. And it's getting close to the NWTF National Convention. There ain't much more to say besides bringing my buddy on, Russell Andrews, to talk a little turkey talk tonight. Tried to get Leon Stilley in here, but he had a meeting to go to, and it's solo, so we ain't going to be cutting LP, up like we normally do.
LP Outlaw.
Yeah, LP Outlaw. In our reality, I'd like to welcome my buddy Russell Andrews to the podcast.
Glad to be here, man. Glad to be a guest.
So you all the way in Alabama, huh?
Idletown, baby.
Oh, my God. It starts off like this every time a LSU person talks to an Alabama person. Just terrible. Just all the way around terrible. Hey, it don't matter. We had the Heisman Trophy winner a couple years ago. I mean, we took it all away.
This past year.
Yeah. So we all good. It's all good. Come on now.
Took it all away except to the West.
You can't take somebody from Louisiana and talk to somebody in Alabama and expect it not to talk about football at some point.
We just got it's two ironclads right there with two historic programs with a lot of respect for each other. So I look forward every time Louisiana comes up to Tuscaloosa. Even if I'm eating some Dumbo gumbo, at least I know it's going to be some good eating.
I know that's right. So for the people that's listening, Russell, tell them a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
So I'm from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, grew up playing baseball. You know, that was my first love. You know, later got into coaching where I coached. I was a pitching coach in high school baseball. Coached in a state championship. Took on and a job being a 7A pitching coach at Tuscaloosa County High and found it be hard to balance, you know, spring turkey hunting and baseball kind of fall in that same season. So it's just really hard to balance both of those. And, you know, we were playing a ball game down there in Montgomery getting ready to play Faith Academy. You know, that's when COVID hit in 2020. That was our last time and to be on the field together. And I got to see what it was really like not to have to balance baseball and turkey hunting. I could go turkey hunting every day. And that's really when I said, you know, I think it's time to hang the clipboard up and throw the mossy oak on and spend some time on a tree. And so I devoted most of my time to turkey hunting after that.
Well, you've been doing a hell of a job. Turkey hunting and turkey calling. It's got to be hard to hang a clipboard up after so long. I don't know how long you coached, but did you ever go back to coaching?
No, I coached for 10 years. And, you know, I guess when I got into coaching, you know, I thought it was going to be all about me and what I was going to teach. But, you know, the more I coached, the longer I coached, it really didn't take it but a year to figure out that, you know, those players were teaching me more than I was able to teach them. And I felt more rewarded for it at the end of the day. So it was hard to leave those relationships. But when one door closes, another one opens, and I was able to build friendships and relationships with you and guys like Big L and Jesse Martin and, you know, Dave Owens and just to name a few guys. And it's really been awesome to see exactly where God opened up doors and led me down this path. So.
Right. And that stuff you hear about from the past, you know, from old timers, as one door closes, another one opens. You can only be so successful throughout life. As long as the door opens when you close one, I feel like you're A-okay at doing what your dream is.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
You grew up in Alabama. I hate to even say the damn name of the town, Tuscaloosa, out of all damn places. But, well, I got you in here because I want to talk about turkey hunting. Turkey season's coming up. Just like we said in the beginning, we got the NWTF coming up. Who got you into turkey hunting?
So my grandfather, who I spent most of my life with, he raised me. He just recently passed away March 17th of 2022. But he's the one that put me on the sport. He's the one that put me into it, made me fall in love with it. I started turkey hunting when I was 10 years old with him. Really didn't have the get up and go urge at that age. I didn't really fall in love with turkey hunting until I was about 20 years old and I called up my first bird and I was addicted. I will tell you that the first turkey I called up was a solid black turkey. Never seen it before. I showed it to Mark Prudhomme here at Grand Nationals and he said, "You mounted that, right?" And I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "You'll never kill another one like that." So it was pretty wild that the first turkey I killed was so rare like it was. No beard, no spurs. Head like a gobbler, strutting and gobbling every step he took like a grown man. And that's really when I fell in love with it. A lot of taking some of the tricks my grandfather taught me at a young age, putting them with new tricks that I'd learned along the way. I really had to teach myself. He would sit on a house out there on Shelly Hughes Road in Buell, Alabama, and he was doing some work on that house. And it was two huge bean fields out there. One was 1,000 yards by 500 yards long, and another one was 700 by 500 yards long.
Holy shit.
And, you know, we would sit out there, and he would watch me screw up turkey hunt after turkey hunt after turkey hunt. And sit there on that old house and watch me screw up these turkey hunts and would just laugh and laugh. You know, when I finally sealed the deal on my first one, it was wild. It was like wildfire. The next day, I killed one. And the following day, I killed one. Well, I killed three turkeys in back-to-back-to-back days, and I didn't kill another one the rest of the season. But we had five tags in Alabama at the time. I filled three of them in 3 days in a row, and that's really what made me want to keep coming back. You know, getting to hunt Alabama is one thing, but I learned that when you leave Alabama, turkeys actually do what they're supposed to do. You know,
for
I've been
sure.
hunting hard-headed birds for so long in this state, and I get outside of the state, and it really made me fall in love with it even more once I got to travel. So my grandfather, Cootie Lewis, who we actually named the turkey call after here at Black Label, the Cootie Lewis Special, is actually the one who got me into it and made me fall in love with it.
That's a hell of a story. That's awesome. At least he didn't come down there and take you by the hand. Let me teach you how to shoot this turkey. He let you try to figure it out on your own. He made you work for what you was trying to kill.
That's exactly right. He was tough. He was tough on me. I mean, I can remember, you know, 7, 8 years old being in the house during the summer. And, you know, my parents were both working and Meemaw and Pawpaw watched me. And Pawpaw would get my butt out of the house. I'd be scraping a house on university somewhere, you know, making pennies on the dollar. But he was trying to teach us hard work. You know, my granddad was a painter by trade. He didn't want us growing up being painters. He wanted us growing up with education and being smart and having good jobs where you didn't have to do that type of labor. So I gained a lot of respect for my grandfather through that.
Yeah, that's crazy. The same way we was kind of raised too. If you didn't work for what you was trying to do, squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting, they're going to tell you one time and that's it. One time, and then if you don't listen, they're going to slap your ass upside the head a time or two until you do listen.
And, exactly right.
That's stuff that happened in the past. I mean, it don't happen like that nowadays. It should. That's my perspective on life. But yeah, them old timers, they didn't play. They let you figure life out as you went.
That's what's missing today, I think. I think there's been too many spoon-fed kids. Might ruffle some feathers, but I'm not one to care about that. I'm gonna say it like it is.
Yeah, it was a tough time. I mean, ass whippings, but you smiled along the way because when your grandpa told you something and you didn't listen, he whipped your ass. And nowadays, they don't do that.
That's right. That's right. No, you hit the nail on the head. I 100% agree. And I saw it, you know, in my coaching. You kind of see the wave coming, and it was a pretty definitive. It was pretty definitive where the line stopped, and another one started. So
right. So you were the coach at the school. You leave the school, and then what?
So I limited out that year, and it didn't take me long, you know, and went to the NWTF that year. I told my wife, Savannah, I said, hey, I really want to go to the NWTF. I want to see what this is all about. So we loaded Ellis up, which is our middle child. We loaded her up in the car and took her out there and got to see what it was all about. I've always been fascinated with how different people made different calls. I wanted to see different stretches, different cuts. I wanted to see how all that pieced together, really. I wanted to learn as much as I could about it. So that brings us kind of where Black Label got started. That first year, I think that was so I finished turkey hunting, and then 2021 rolls around. Well, rewind, 2022 rolls around. We go, this is my first NWTF. Caleb Payton was there. I'd hunted with Caleb, met Caleb through a guy named Chad Hoggle, who is the owner of American Strutter. When I get out to Nashville, I already had that connection with Caleb. I told Caleb, I said, I really want to meet Jesse. I want to meet the guy, see what he's about. So got in the room with Jesse. Jesse's pushing out gobble calls and mouth yelpers. And I wanted to show him what I had because I thought I was a pretty good turkey caller. Until Jesse started throwing a call in his mouth, and I really wanted to take a shovel, dig up the ground, bury my turkey calls, and pour some quickcrete on top of it.
That's just natural.
That
yeah.
guy's just phenomenal. That guy's good. You couldn't, if you put him in the woods, I couldn't tell you the difference between him and a hen. So I kind of threw up the fact, you know, hey, I really, really want to start a game call company, and he was 100% on board. And 5 months later, you know, Black Label Game Calls LLC is born. And, you know, we had a booth in Nashville that first year. So it was pretty wild to see it come to fruition and to see it grow like it has. Jesse and I fight like brothers. We're very close. Our families are very close. I love his kids like they're my own. He's the same way with mine. So his oldest daughter and my oldest daughter are best friends. Thinking their phone, it actually says besties, which makes me cringe a little bit, but it's been a fun ride so far.
It's kind of crazy to me because it's so recent and you've accomplished so many things in a short period of time. So apparently you really knew you were addicted to it really, really fast to even take the initiative.
That's right. Yeah, really. Yeah. So like with the calling competitions and stuff, you know, I knew the A's and B's and C's were in place for my gobble. I just didn't have it really pieced together. I would run it for guys like Terrence Williamson, and Terrence would be like, you got to clean it up. Caleb Payton, you got to clean it up. And I was like, I don't really understand what y'all mean by cleaning it up. Like, I feel like I'm the first calling competition I went to, I think it was in 2021, and I didn't even play, which for good reason. I was gobbling on a ghost cut. I could make it sound pretty good. But the dynamics weren't there for it. And when I finally got a gobble call in my hand, and I had some work from guys like Terry Elliott and Jesse coaching me, it was pretty wild to see how fast that growth took place within my calling. It's very humbling to even be mentioned in the same names of guys like Terry Elliott, Joe Slayton, you know, Travis Ham. It's a very humbling feeling to know that, you know, my name's in the hat.
Oh, yeah, I bet it is.
Winning the Grand National. So.
Right. You bring up Travis Ham. That's how we met you. That was last year, 2023. And you competed against Travis Ham. Dave Owens was there. Hunter Lemoyne, yep. He was there because Hunter puts it on. That was a hell of a competition. They got a big payout. I think they almost pay out way more than NWTF does.
Yeah, they will probably surpass.
Oh, yeah, they will because of the following that Kenyon Bankston has. Shout out to Kenyon, Southern Boys Outdoors, Big L, Leon Stilley. I think it's pretty amazing that in such a short period of time, some people work on a gobble or just even a mouth call years and can't perfect it. And for you to start at a such short period of time, I mean, that's unreal. You must have been doing that shit in the truck 24/7 when you was in the, basically every time you was in the vehicle, because I can tell you one thing. Every time turkey season comes around, my wife hates fucking turkey calls.
I really tried to perfect my turkey calling when I was in the Air Force. I did a little stint in the Air Force from, let's see here, 2006 to 2012, and I would have to drive from Tuscaloosa, Alabama to Charleston, South Carolina. And that was about a 7.5-hour drive, I think. I had a CD in my truck. Don't quote me on this, but I want to say the name of the CD was Spittin' Feathers, baby, but it had Walter Parrott on there, had some real turkeys on there, and I would literally blow a turkey call out on the drive up there and the drive back. There would be one turkey call that I could not run anymore because I'd run it so much.
Run the reeds out of it.
To mimic everything. Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, it was, it looked like a curtain after I got done with it. It had wrinkles all in it, stretched all out. But, you know, I would try to mimic the sounds of the wild turkey. And, you know, growing up as a kid, when we finally got dial-up internet, I'd have to wait for YouTube videos to load. Came across a guy named Preston Pittman. I found it amazing that he could gobble like that. And I said, that is cool. That is what I want to do. I want to learn how to do that. And it has taken me, you know, I feel like I haven't even perfected it yet. I will run sometimes and everybody's like, that's one of the best we've ever heard.
Spot on.
I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, but I hear this in it. Hear this in it. This could be better or that could be better. So I don't half-ass stuff a whole lot. I try to do it the right way, the perfect way. I coach my players that a perfect practice equals a perfect win. Not practice makes perfect. So, you know, I wanted to really be hell bent on perfection anytime I was doing it. And that's really where I critique myself so much is just when I get on stage, every gobble has to be perfect. The separation of those gobbles has to be perfect. The routine has to be perfect. Everything has to be perfect in order for you to win. Winning now is not, it's awesome. I love to win. I don't want to come off arrogant when I say this, but I want to be, I don't want to just win. I want to win big. I want to put as much points on those scorecards as I can. And the only way I know to do that is to perfect everything that I do.
So just as a person in the crowd, because I was there when you was gobbling at Southern Boys, do you think it sounds different when you're doing it compared to the crowd listening or the judges listening?
Yes, I do. You know, I was at Columbus, Mississippi for the Peach State Classic a couple weeks ago, and I gobbled for Dave in a room in there, and Dave said, that's it. You're not getting beaten here today. I gobbled on that stage. I thought it sounded good from what I heard through the video was the kind of the RPMs picking out on it, putting too much into the call. I just hear a bunch of noise when I gobble. If I'm in a room with great acoustics, so I practice at my church, Taylorville Baptist here in Tuscaloosa, and I get up there and my pastor allows me to go in there and practice throughout the week, and it's got great acoustics in there. So I can really hear my gobble a lot better. Sounds a lot like the Grand National stage when I'm up there, when I'm gobbling. I got up on Grand National stage last year when I wasn't in it, just when all the friction guys were in there running, and I really wanted to hear what my gobble sounded like in there. So I was lucky enough to go to a church that the acoustics so much like it does at Grand National.
And the same thing at the NWTF is an open stage, same right. Scenario as a church. It's you walk up on the stage, it's open, pretty good size. The people sitting in the crowd listening, does I mean, that's got to take a toll on you at some time. Not only the people, the cameras and everything else.
So, you know, I was nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs when I was over there with y'all at Southern Boys. That was only my third top, you know, and I was nervous as all get out in there. And, you know, I don't know. I just got up there. Jesse told me, just make sure every gobble's perfect. And that's what I did. And, you know, I was shocked as anybody. When they called me up for the top three, I thought for sure that my first ever contest was going to be, you know, second runner-up, maybe first runner-up. I never in a million years would have thought that they'd have called me for that top first-place trophy. I was overwhelmed with emotion, you know. I had my granddad on my mind. It was surreal, you know, and I got the generator over here still. Don't know what I'm doing with it yet.
Hey, that's about right. Well, if you ain't using it, I might need to borrow it during hurricane season.
You come on and get it. I promise you, you can take it. You can take it and use it. It needs to be put to good use. But, you know, I've learned that, you know, you asked about being nervous with all the people looking at you and maybe cameras and stuff. But I have learned that with more confidence in every contest, I get less and less nervous. And it doesn't really faze me. Everybody tells me that, you know, hey, Grand Nationals is different. But what I keep telling myself is, you know, kind of like when I pitched in baseball in front of a huge crowd or something, you know, don't make it into something bigger than it already is. You know, just go up there, execute what you're doing, execute your calls, make sure everything is perfect, and you're going to be okay. So that's kind of my mentality going into Grand Nationals, is just get up there, go up there with a lot of confidence, focus on what you got to do for 60 seconds, and get off the stage.
When you was with us, when we met you for the first time, I think it's crazy. I thought you'd been doing it for a long time, you know. Looking back now, coming up on a year, we short of a few months.
Yeah.
As the Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama State Goblin champion in 2023, how hard do you think the opportunity is to stay on top? I mean, you had guys like Travis Ham, which won the Grand National at Nashville at the NWTF convention last year. And you beat him out.
Yeah.
Which we all buddies. So yeah, we could talk about Travis Ham. We gotta give him some shit every now and then. Even though he thinks he's the best of the best. Which he was last year.
He was. He had a good day.
At the NWTF.
He was good.
No, he's a hell of a gobbler, man. It's hard to top a person like that. Critiques themselves. Turkey hunts all over, so they know different goblin sounds, because not every turkey sounds the same. And I'm sure right. You know that too. I don't know how many places you ever been, but I know Hambone, damn, he goes all over the place.
I hit 11 states last year, and I'm slated to hit 20 this year, 20 states.
So are you going for the, was it 49?
Yeah, I'm chasing 49, the U.S. Super Slam. Yes, sir. I am trying to check some off. You know, one thing I found that's really tough when you're doing this is you'll hunt a place. You'll hunt a state or hunt somewhere in a state, and it's just such good turkey hunting. It's really, really hard to substitute that state for a new state. I don't know. I've had to do it. I don't like doing it. I'm going to have to box some states out this year and not go to them, but there's some that I am revisiting. I'll revisit Nebraska this year. I've got a really good friend of mine that's a pro staffer up there in New York, Jesse Holtz, call him Squeak. I'll be with him again in New York and Vermont this year. Probably cap out the season in Maine. You know, that's a funny story. We were headed to Maine, and my wife said, well, how long do I need to get this Airbnb for? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know anything about Maine. Let's book it for 3 days. Okay. So, you know, we're about to pull into Maine, and she says, I think you're going to like this Airbnb. It's got a lot of woods around it. And I said, yeah, you know, whatever. We'll see. Well, I get there, you know, and me and my daughter Ellis are walking around in the yard. She says, Daddy, look, a turkey feather.
I said, you got to be kidding me. And it was. It was turkey feather. And I said, Savannah said, you going to hunt here in the morning? I said, no, I'm not hunting here. I'm not hunting in the backyard of the Airbnb. That's not, I'm not doing that.
So, typical redneck from the South.
Yeah, you know, I wake up next morning and I drive on some public land and I just get out, you know, every 200 yards driving down the main road right there and I hoot. I don't hear nothing. And I'm like, man, this ain't looking good. Get going down there and hang a left on this road and I get out, shut the truck door, and as soon as I did, pow, I said, oh, buddy. Well, they were on private. But, you know, the one thing up there, if it's not posted property, you can hunt it. Something about that northeastern part, the New England state, it's got to be posted legally, I learned. It's got to be posted every 50 feet, name and address. And it's also got to be registered with the county clerk's office. But, you know, nobody ever digs in that deep.
Right.
If it's posted, you know, just have the respect. Don't go on their property. But sitting here, I own a game call company. I'm like, look, man, I can't be getting caught doing some sketchy stuff, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. The warm weather here in Alabama the past couple of days, they've had me on the fence of bad decisions with good intentions. But I just can't go off and do that. But you know where I'm coming from.
Oh, I know exactly where you come from.
I had some Carl Ray Holyfield thoughts going through my head.
Hey, look, I was just about to bring that up because the last time we did a podcast party over here, I forgot where we were at. I think 50th, maybe. But Carl Holyfield left here that night and drove to Maine to go with the cartel game calls. Was able to get on some turkeys up there and kill a couple of them. So
that's what I did. I drove to Maine.
That's crazy. How many hours is this?
I can't remember, dude.
Got to be 30 some hours, huh?
Well, we drove to Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and we stayed with Jesse and Whitney over there because our kids just they run together. They love each other. Styler and Ellis are two peas in a pod. So we wanted to get them together, you know. Before we headed out, we got up there. I killed in Pennsylvania, went up there and killed in New York, killed in Vermont. There's nothing like the mountains in New York, the Adirondacks. Absolutely, probably the most gorgeous state I've ever hunted. Hunting in Vermont, crazy dude. I had to call Jesse on this one and rub it in his face. I had some turkeys gobbling. I asked Squeak, said, where are those birds at? He said, they're in New York. I said, I ain't got a New York tag. He said, well, you better get them over here in Vermont. And by golly, I'll be dang if I didn't start doing some crazy stuff on a mouse call. And those birds flew the Dagum River from New York to Vermont, and I killed them in Vermont.
Holy shit!
Yeah, it got western there for a little bit, but you know, we get over there to Maine, and I shut the truck door, and these turkeys start gobbling, and I'm looking on it, and there's a half acre where a graveyard is that says Maine government land. I said, I'm about to hunt this. I flip up there in this graveyard, and there's a tombstone that's about 3 foot tall and about 3 foot wide. There's a soldier that had died in 1776 that's on that tombstone. You could barely make it out. It was the craziest thing ever. I got up there, and I hid behind this grave. Or excuse me, it wasn't 1770. It was 1861. It was a Union soldier that had died is what it was. I get up there on this grave and I can see the turkey's head on the other side of the fence and I shot and killed him. I load that turkey up, head back. I'm drinking coffee on the back of the Airbnb and I heard a faint gobble. I said, yeah, get out of here. I said, it sounded like Jake. You know, I have gobbles. So the windows are open on the house. You know, it's springtime. We're not running the air in that house. The kids are asleep. Ellis and Sloan are in the bed. Savannah's in the bed. I said, hey, I just killed a turkey over here. I said, but I got one gobbling in the back of the Airbnb. I said, I'm going to see if he wants to play the game. Sounds like a Jake. You never know. Let's get out here. And
sometimes you get them super Jakes.
Hey, look, sometimes you get them out there. Sometimes they'll have you fooled, man. You end up.
Oh, for sure.
Get over there and he's got some slick legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get over there and called one time and he's fired back. I said, well, that ain't no Jake right there. That's a man bird. It's crazy, dude. I ain't going to go into detail, but he circled around, came in the field, and I shot him at 30 yards, killed him. And I look, Savannah, the kids are standing outside. They see a turkey flopping and daddy bringing it up there, you know. And Savannah's laughing. She said, "How many turkeys you allowed to kill here?" I said, "2." I said, "I'm limited out." She said, "What do we do now?" I said, "Start Googling whale watching tours. I don't know what we're going to do. We got to do something because we've got this Airbnb for 2 more days. We enjoyed some lobster and some awesome oysters they got up there in the Northeast, and got ready to start planning our next kills in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire played out just to a T, you know. Had to work that first day. I think the first day, I didn't kill that first day, or maybe I did. Maybe I killed that afternoon, but, you know, I had to scratch a little bit there, but we were able to make it happen and killed the last bird on May 30th, which was my daughter's 4th birthday. And so celebrated her birthday up there and came back. So we kind of made it a family affair, but I enjoy hunting out of Alabama. Alabama's fun, don't get me wrong. I feel like you go through a stretch hunting Alabama, it'll get you ready for anything. I'm looking forward to this year. I got Big L and Bubba Buck coming to hunt with me. Travis is coming to hunt with me in Alabama this year. And
that's going
to
be a hell of a time.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, I know you'd want to be a fly on the wall there. It's probably not going to be a dull
Lord one. Have mercy.
You can bleed that.
Bleed that. Yeah, that'd be a hell of a time for sure. So, I know we always get to riffraff about people from the South going to the North and killing turkeys. Do you believe that the North can come down here and kill these turkeys?
I think a few people can. I don't want to say that they can't. I think anybody, you know, kill a turkey on the right day if the temperature's right on that. I think it's a lot harder. I've said it for years, and, you know, people on your podcast may laugh at me. Everybody's got their own opinions, but I truly, firmly believe that you've got Easterns, Merriams, Rios, Osceolas, and then you've got West Alabama turkeys. these turkeys over
No, they got them Louisiana turkeys too, lockjaw.
Buddy, they're fly, man. They are fly. I've had them. I've been hunting with people before, and they're like, why are you calling behind you? I'm like, dude, I'm throwing it. What are you doing that for? I was like, because I've had too many come up, not say a word, come up behind me, and all of a sudden,
yeah, right. And then a lot of people don't know what throwing is. So when you're looking around, you're calling, you're throwing the sound behind you because you're trying to meet him in the middle. So if the sound's behind you, the further he's going to come up to you.
That's right. That's right. Call real soft. Less is more, especially in Alabama. I will get down on them now, but, you know, you just got to play it for what it is. You know, you're dealt a hand of cards every time you walk in the woods, and you just got to kind of fill those cards out. It's a chess match. That's why I love it. Trying to figure that turkey out, what he's wanting. You know, I mean, there's been times in the spring I've had a turkey in the field, redhead, not, you know, just pecking around, call to him. I've had him run off, and I'm like, what'd I just do? They're weird. They're weird animals, but that's what, you know, really keeps us coming back.
Anything that you don't have to work for, it's not fun.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, it's just boring, you know, when somebody just, now, when you got to work for something, you're going to respect it so much more, 10 times more. Damn, Louisiana, Mississippi, they hard enough on their own, you know?
That's two salt blocks right there. Hey,
that's basically like a gar hole. Unless you got that chopped corn, you know what I mean? And bird seeds.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, that one in Maine I killed had some bird seed in him. I was like, oh. Took that while over. I said, man, he's been in a bird feeder somewhere. But, to answer your question, though, yeah, I think it's going to be more of a challenge for people up north. It's tough. Some of them may be sitting there like, this guy's crazy. But, just from how I've seen some people hunt up there, and I'm like, you know, them tricks ain't going to work down south, old buddy.
I mean, shit, we barely see even turkeys crossing the road or in the field. Well, especially over here in Louisiana. We might see a handful during turkey season, but any other time of the year, we don't see any turkeys.
Well, it makes you a better turkey hunter for sure. You know, if you can slip through some crunchy leaves in a hardwood to kill a turkey.
Yeah, you might even have to take your boots off for them. Just depends on the situation.
People think it's flat out here. We got some pretty hefty bluffs out here that'll get you turned around in a hurry on a gobble too. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, them ridges, boy, they'll change your mind. We talk about the Homestead National Forest. Anybody that's ever hunted in there, you might get on a turkey and he might gobble his damn brains out, but he might be 10 ridges away.
That's exactly right. The
ridges are making it sound like he's like right there when he's like actually 10 ridges away, which makes it even harder for the person that's hunting.
We got the bluffs over there. I tell you what.
Yes, those bluffs.
Mountains in the Adirondack. Been some really good ones come out of there. Travis Ham ain't one of them, but there's been some. He's going to be cussing me when he hears this.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. He knows we just joking with him.
Oh, yeah. I love Travis to death.
Oh, Ham Bones, my boy. But, yeah, it takes a lot.
Yeah, I think, buddy, I think your Matt Van Sykes can. I think.
Oh, yeah. Scott Ellis, Matt Van Sykes, all them cats. Oh, yeah, they got it going on.
Yeah, they can figure it out. You know, I think even my pro staffer, Jesse Holt, you know, he's been to Alabama. I think he's killed here. He just, you know, from what talking to them, you know, he just told me, hey, it's just a little more challenging. Birds aren't as vocal. And I think that has a lot to do with predators, too, you know. Got a really good friend of mine who's on my pro staff, Jeremy Nick. And Jeremy actually shared some pictures with me today of just some of the activity he's gotten on his game cameras. And just being able to see the growth of turkeys and on his place especially, and from last year to this year, and seeing how many longbeards he's got in a group right now in that bachelor group versus last year. Jeremy trapped, he's trapped 52 coons and possums since November the 1st.
Damn, that's amazing on its own. To even take the initiative in time, that's amazing.
It's wild to see, you know, just, and I understand that, you know, the poults were already there, you know, and grown into bigger turkeys by then, but just to see the growth in turkeys he's had since he's been killing these coyotes, these bobcats, these coons, these possums, it's really cool. And I feel like if every turkey hunter would just take out 5 to 10 coons on their property a year, just 5 to 10, man, heck, just 5, I feel like that you're helping yourself, you're helping the turkeys, you know.
It's
gonna
be
a lot more growth.
I mean, yeah. You look at your buddy, look at Lynchburg, look at Joseph Lynch, my cousin, right?
Yep.
Just on his place, and I've been hunting there my whole life, right? And just taking that initiative to go out there and trap coons and possums and armadillos and just a few he catches, it's making a difference.
Well, that fool lives in the Armadillo City. Every time I talk to him,
yes,
he's sneaking up on an armadillo left and right.
Oh, for sure. Your best friend is like a 22.
I think he had like 4 or 5 in one picture one time.
Yeah.
You know, when he was out walking around, I'm like, good God almighty, at all the day. Yeah, he and I do a lot of chat during the off season, in season.
He's taught me everything I know about turkey calling, what and when and why to call to that turkey, and what mouth call to use or how to use it.
I hope he's telling you to use Black Label.
Just listening to him call and how he works a bird is just unbelievable to me.
There's definitely an art to it. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. And just because you can call good at a turkey room don't mean you can call good in the woods.
That is true. There's a lot of truth to that. But I tell you this, a lot of those guys in that room have perfected it. They have perfected it. I mean, they're just, I can tell you, Jesse's thrown some stuff at some turkeys before that I can't. And I feel like it's really enticed those birds to come in. You know, just how he's able to work those birds with the certain calls that he's able to throw out there. He's got a dirty yelp on him.
So let me ask you this. So as good as a turkey caller you are, do you use decoys or are you just solo hunt with none?
No, I use decoys. You know, we're actually sponsored by AVNX Avian X, Apex ammunition. You know, I use decoys. Now, during the first 10 days of the season in Alabama, we cannot use decoys. And I kill them without them.
That's a rule?
Yeah, it is a rule.
Damn, I never heard of that.
First 10 days of the season, you can't use decoys in this state. But, you know, I kill them without them. I kill them with them. I enjoy putting a Jake decoy out there, you know, one of those quarter strut Navy and X Jakes, and watching those birds come in there and just beat the hell out of it. I enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ain't nothing like it.
Heck no. I eat that up. But, you know, you got other guys that, you know, they'd rather kill them, you know, without them. And I've got some friends of mine that are that way. They're not going to chastise you for using decoys, but, you know, at the same time, they're just not going to use them themselves.
Right.
And that's fine. I'll never chastise somebody for, you know, using a decoy, reaping a turkey. You know, I know it's illegal to reap a turkey in Alabama. When I go to Nebraska.
Is it really?
Like that? It is. It's you can't do that.
When I go up
to Nebraska, that is what I don't ever get to do that. I can call those birds in. Yeah. Would I rather call them in? Yes and no. I mean, I just never get to reap. So when I get up there, you know, it's like, hey, show him a fantasy. It's fun watching.
It's
that.
Nothing like seeing a turkey run 200-400 yards across a field after.
Buddy, man.
But the same thing. So I don't think people understand. It's an art to it.
An art to it.
With deer horns. So when you got a deer, you hit them rattling horns and them some bitches come in there like on a mission. It's the same thing as turkey reaping. It's the same thing.
And there's an art to it. You know, with how you show them the fan.
Gotta pop that fan.
I lay it down and pick it up I mean, I like doing that. There's a lot of people that are 100% against it. You know what? It's legal right now. I enjoy doing it from time to time. I'm not going to chastise somebody for not doing it. You know, about the only thing I'm going to chastise you for is for throwing some seed on the ground.
Right.
Sporting that. That's not turkey hunting. That's deer hunting. A turkey is what that is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like casting bird seed and chopped corn. Or I mean, some people put real corn out there, you know. And,
Milo.
But at the end of the day, that's kind of like shooting deer in a pen, you know, or shooting fish in a bucket. You ain't working for the bird. Like, I want to work the bird.
That's right.
And look. Just because you reap a turkey or just because you got a decoy and a fan on there don't mean that you're going to succeed at reaping a turkey.
That's right.
Can I ask you this? I don't know how many times you've been up north, but I feel like if you kill a Louisiana bird, whether it be a Jake, whoever you get a fan from, it don't matter whether you killed it, your kid killed it, whoever killed it, you put him on a decoy. A Louisiana bird, I'm talking about, or Mississippi, or Alabama. If you bring that decoy to the Midwest and turkey hunt, I feel like almost every single time, them birds would jump his ass because the fans on the birds down here in the South are not as big as the birds in the Midwest.
I feel like some of those fans, I feel like every turkey's fan varies. I've killed some Easterns that's had some fans that are bigger than any Merriam I've killed. You know, I think the turkeys up there in North, I've reaped turkeys in the Northeast, or not Northeast, in Nebraska, excuse me, with an Eastern fan.
All right, so basically that's right there on the edge of the Midwest. Yeah,
that's right. I've reaped them with it. And, you know, they basically see that fan and it's like, ooh, you know, new turkey. Let's go check him out. Let's go see what he's about. You know, I've showed it to him before. I did it. Had my buddy Jeremy sitting there next to me and had an Eastern fan and a beautiful Rio comes up out of this field, sees that fan, comes right into it. You get some good video and some great audio sometimes when you do it. But I don't think that the fan, just them seeing the fan at all, they're coming.
Maybe I should ask you in a different way, because if we were just hunting Easterns, which is 100% what we have.
Right.
If we go all the way up to Iowa and pass, that's mostly Easterns. Now, we get some hybrids every now and then, you know.
Right.
In the central states. Because you got Rios and Merriam's and all that coming from, like, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska right there.
That's right.
But I feel like as long as you hunt Easterns, if you hunt Eastern, just say, I feel like that strutter from Louisiana, like the tail fan. If you got either a Jake or even a full-grown gobbler, them tail fans ain't as big as them birds up there. At least not the ones we've shot in the past.
I'm not 100% on that. I don't think I can comment on it. Either way, I've killed some big, I mean, there's, of course, the turkeys up there around Iowa and places like that are going to be bigger, eating grain and stuff like that.
Yeah, but poundage-wise, you know.
But I've killed some Easterns around here that's had some whopper of fans.
Mega fans, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really compare the fans. I love the fans. I love a fan on a turkey because I feel like it's a thumbprint.
That's his signature. That's like his.
Everybody's got a different thumbprint. I feel like every turkey fan is different in its own way. I think they're beautiful. I think that's probably the prettiest thing on a turkey is the fan. I cut off the fans. I love the fans. I do. I've got several of them, a bunch of them back in that back room in the house. But I love keeping the fans on the turkey. To me, that's one of my most favorite things.
It's hard to beat a good fan.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the NWTF is coming, and you placed in it.
You got the Goblin and Al, who you actually, it's open to anybody. You know, you don't have to qualify for that. I'm hoping one day that you do, but right now you don't have to qualify for Goblin or Al hooting in Grand Nationals. It's a senior open and friction that you have to qualify to get up there on stage at Grand Nationals. But I've registered for the Grand Nationals. It's been my first year. I'm excited about it. We'll have a booth set up there, booth 510. We'll kind of be between Nomad and Multi Oak. So if you're there, come see us. Come holler at us. Come hang out in the booth. You know, we'll have some cold snacks for our buddies. So come see us.
So how's it feel to make it to Nashville on the big stage? And knowing Hambone, how's it feel with the competition as far as that goes, you know? Because y'all are neck and neck when I hear y'all, but that don't actually work out for the judges all the time.
Right. Well, you know, just like I said earlier, to be able to compete against guys like Terry Elliott, Joe Slayton, and Travis Ham, and Douglas Herman, and, you know, you've got all that talent up there, to even have my name mentioned as somebody that you know, stands a good chance to place up there is surreal. I'm excited for the opportunity. I'm eager to get up there. It's like anything else, though. You learn something new every time. You know, to me, that's what's fun about Nashville. I feel like my turkey calling gets taken to a different level every time I'm up there, and I'm able to be around these guys in the industry and hear them call and learn different stuff from them. So, you know, being on stage at the Grand Nationals is just icing on the cake. being able to take from it stuff that I've learned regarding calling or turkey hunting in general, to me, is what it's about. Getting to see everybody there. It's like a, you know, they say it's a family reunion, and it is. You know, I look forward to seeing Mitchell Johnson and you know, Terrence Williamson, which I'm in the duck club with Terrence. Cody Gibson, you know, for the Worlds, we all got a beach house that stayed on Dolphin Island this past year for Worlds and got to hang out, and our families got to mingle, and it was fun. So being under one roof at Opryland and getting to see everybody, that to me is what it's all about. Learning different techniques on a mouth call, or when to call here when you're turkey hunting, or, you know, different tricks out of the bag from a lot of these guys. that you can take home with you and apply when you're in the woods. That in itself is really what I'm looking forward to. Being on stage with these guys, I'm humbled to be standing next to those guys on, you know, in the Goblin division. That's just icing on the cake.
So taking you back to when you were coaching, right? And taking you to the Nashville stage, do you think that nerves work a little better because you've been in certain situations in the past, or do you work better under pressure?
You know, when I pitched in baseball, I had a job. You know, my stepdad taught me when I was young and I was playing, he said three things. I want you to have a role. I want you to know your role, and I want you to execute your role. That's all I want you to do. So when I pitched, I was a starting pitcher. That was my role. I knew what I had to do up there. My role was to execute a pitch 60 feet, 6 inches away, dot it up, make it happen every time, repetition. And that's where execution came in. So I don't, with nerves and everything, I'm chill. I'm good. I feel like pitching in baseball in front of people and facing some really good hitters and being put in some pressure-packed situations, whether it be runners in scoring position and nobody out. And I need a ground ball to the left side to hold these runners and, you know, maybe get a strikeout or a shallow pop fly, figuring out ways to get out of the inning and pressure-packed situations. Yeah, I think it's probably prepared me for being on a stage up there, but in the same sense, it's different. You know, it's just different. But I think it's all how you channel it and all what you make of it. You know, am I gonna tell myself, you know, oh my goodness, you're going to the biggest stage in turkey calling. You know, this is the Super Bowl of turkey calling.
It really is the Super Bowl.
It is, but mentally you just got to tell yourself, hey man, I'm going up on stage. I'm gonna run a call for 60 seconds. I'm gonna make sure everything's perfect. I'm gonna go up here and I'm gonna execute what I know how to do, and I'm gonna get off the stage. I'm gonna do the best that I possibly can in 60 seconds to give them everything I got, and I'm gonna walk off with zero regret. And I think that in itself is what you have to do when you get on that stage. Given I've never been there. So, you know, it's just like anything else. You know, when my guys were preparing for a state championship when I was at 60, you know, we were playing a Madison Academy group. It was pretty dang good. They'd been there a few times. And you know, they knew what it was like on that big stage. And for my guys who have never been there, and if you know, we lost 3-2 both games, but I thought that they played exceptionally well. I thought that those guys were ready. PJ Guy, who was our coach over there, who I feel like is one of the best baseball coaches in the state of Alabama, did an exceptional job getting our guys ready to play at that level. But I felt like, you know, the edge had to go to Madison Academy because those guys had been there before.
Right.
You know, they knew what to expect. So with me coming into it, I just wanted to not make it something bigger than it already was. Yes, we're in the state championship. Yes, I'm going up on the Grand National
stage. We're just playing a regular game.
We're going up there.
Everybody wants to win.
That's it.
Everybody wants to win. Well, I can tell you this from me, from between the times, we are rooting for you, my boy. We love you, man, from over here, down here in South Louisiana. And I'll get to see you. I'll stop by your booth and we'll chit chat and bullshit like we always do.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to hit up the watering hole.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's the best place to go. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, I didn't go last year. I made it year before last, but I didn't go last year. And, oh, man, I was mad. But
That's why we didn't have as much fun.
Oh, well, if you're going to be there this year, we are definitely going to have a hell of a time. And
yeah, I was sitting there. I was like, D-Walk ain't here. We can't start the party.
Man, we have a hell of a time when we go. I just want to bullshit with my boys that I don't get to see all the time. Maybe do a podcast or two. Shoot the shit. Buy some merchandise from the people I know. And, you know, just celebrate. Whether you win, you lose, first, second, third. I just enjoy the camaraderie. We just like having a hell of a good time.
I'm gonna steal a line from Ole Miss here. You know, at Black Label, we may lose the game, but we'll never lose the party. We'll never lose the party. We're gonna have a good time. That's what our group's about, man. We got a fun group over there. You know, our callers are, you know, me, Jesse, Kerry, Caleb, Michael Strong. We've got a strong group of callers over there. Caleb does a really good job with Al Hooten. Kerry is always in the mix on Goblin. I think he's calling him Friction this year. Jesse at the Open. You know, it'll be my first time Goblin. Strong qualified. Michael Strong qualified out of Mississippi this year to go and compete in Grand Nationals in Friction. I'm really proud of that guy. He's a strong caller. He's coming on strong. He's doing a really good job. And we got a pro staffer to be competing in Open too, Tracy Doty out of Mississippi. So, you know, we got a good group. We got a great pro staff made up of really a bunch of my friends. I was telling a guy today that, you know, I've had some guys come up, hey, how do we get on the pro staff? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. You know, and they're like, well, you ain't got to know me. I'm like, well, to be on our pro staff, I really would like to know you. So,
let me help you help me.
That's right. You know, look, your friend's going to want to watch you succeed. You know what I mean?
Well, so, you say that, but not all the time.
Well, this fine group I have.
Nothing more happens to a better person than see them succeeding.
That's right.
And we had a tough go on the podcast, you know, because I was sitting here thinking, like, all these people that love me are, like, support me or been around me all my life. Damn. But now, guess what? They support me. That's right. I don't know what made the flip.
I'm always down there in South Louisiana. As a matter of fact, I got a fish trip coming up down there right after Grand Nationals. We will be, what's right across?
A boat fishing trip?
No, we're going after tuna and wahoo.
Oh, y'all going to Venice?
Yeah, well, we're not going to Venice. We're going out of
Grand Isle?
It's right across from Grand Isle. What is that? Fushan.
All right, Fushan. Yeah, Fushan. Yeah. I knew you had to be close. Like, where we work at, we not far from Grand Isle.
Yeah, so that's where we usually do the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. So my buddy Keith Kaiser has a 32 contender. It's the Black Label boat. It's wrapped in Black Label game calls.
Holy shit. I'm glad my brother-in-law left. He was here earlier. He's a big-time fisherman, you know. Hey, I put him on his first bird and worked him like a champ with no video camera. And he killed him. And I was like, holy shit. He's not the hunter. He likes doing it, but he's the fisherman. If you want to go catch red specks, bass, call your boy.
We need to we need to connect on that, dude. It'd be fun to get us all on the
boat. Every time we go to the camp, which is it's about an hour from my house, which is shorter for you because it's your way. We always cook just something, you know.
I wouldn't be worth nothing on that boat after eating.
Worth 2 cent Chinese money, huh?
the cold snacks go down too quick when I'm on that water too. It's something about
them cool pops.
Water that makes it want to go down.
That's faster. That fucking heat and humidity. That's what it is.
It's pouring out of you as quick as it's pouring in you.
It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate you coming on here, Russell.
Absolutely.
You a hell of a guy. I mean, we met you and shit. You ain't had to come out there and bullshit with us like you did.
I've enjoyed it. I enjoy your cousin, Lynch. He's been a really good friend of mine for a long time now. And I've just enjoyed going back bantering between Alabama and LSU and just talking our trash together. I mean, it's all in good fun. I mean, we love each other.
Oh, we got to. That's us.
That's what it's about.
Maybe this year when you come down for the turkey calling competition, you actually come in studio. How about that? Because I only live like 20 minutes from there.
Man, that would be awesome. Yeah, I think so the game plan right now is I'm trying to find an Airbnb big enough for all of us. Like, well, I say all of us. I mean, me, Jesse Martin's coming next year. Kerry Elliott, Caleb Payton will be there. Dave Owens, Hunter Lamone. I want to get us all under one roof. Cause Jason Conrad, Bruce. A lot of people don't understand this, though, but we, you know, as game call companies, we are competitors, but man, we want to see everybody success. You know, I want to see Woodhaven and Houndstooth and Penn Hody just as successful as us.
I'm the same way. Dude. I don't feel like even with the podcast, I don't feel like I want to see everybody succeed.
That's right.
But yeah, it's been a hell of a time. Hey, thank you so much for being on here. But if you could hunt with one person, living or in the past, who would it be and why?
That's easy. I'd hunt with my granddaddy one more time. I would hunt with my pawpaw one more time. If I could, out of anybody on planet Earth, 5 minutes with that man and up against the tree one more time, I'd do it. And to anybody that's listening, if you got a granddaddy that's got you into it, spend some time with them. You know, you never know when it might be the last time that you get to spend some time with them. I've got two cousins of mine, Adam and Tyler Wade, that, you know, Pawpaw raised all three of us up together, hunting and fishing, and, you know, taught us everything that we know about the outdoors. And I know that their answer would be the exact same. If they had one person that they could hunt or fish with one time, it'd be him. He had that much of an impact on me and us growing up. It was very special. So that it would be Mr. Cootie Lewis, out in Eugene Lewis, is who it would be.
I really appreciate it. Russell Andrews, the 3-state national champion of the Goblin Division. Make sure y'all check him out. Look him up on all his social media platforms. I'm sure he has one for all of them.
Yes, sir.
From Between the Times Outdoor Podcast, we are out.